Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé WTF Podcast, a weekly hangout to talk about what the fuck we all just watch on TLC's 90 Day Fiancé. I am Nadia, and with me is my co-host, Lon.
Welcome back.
Hey, Lon.
What's up?
Wake up and smell the cookie cake.
What?
Sophie's mom said, you have to wake up and smell the cookie cake.
Oh, yeah.
I never heard of that phrase before. I don't know. Maybe I don't read a lot.
That was over my head, too. I was like, what?
Cookie cake. Like, I've heard of wake up and smell the roses, but like, wake up and smell the cookie cake. But anyway, shall we talk about Sophie and Rob? And by the way, listeners, we are covering 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, Season 8. Oof, I think this is episode 8.
8.
Yep.
Sophie and Rob's actually an interesting segment this episode for them. I'm not sure how much of the amethyst stuff seemed planned out, because it was almost like it was a bad look for Rob, because everything the guy was saying was definitely fit in the context of what they're going through. And I was like, was this like a planned conversation here for them to go like flea market shopping? And they just so happened to find this guy, and she so happened to pick the stone that was going to lead to the conversations of like, you need to trust your gut instinct. Something's going on, you know, and flashing to Rob every 2 seconds, and he's like getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was such a setup. But the guy did make a point, which is what we kind of alluded to a few episodes ago, when he's like, you need to write down your grievances. And then she's like, well, he did that already, and my list is going to be so long and all that stuff. And it just led to kind of another argument. My thing, though, which I thought was really telling and really interesting, was the hoe phone. Right? Like,
how,
that.
How did I also not heard of that term?
I called it a burner.
Yeah.
I called it a burner
Isn't
phone.
It just a burner?
Yeah. How maybe is burner is this. Burner is more if you're doing like
deals.
Deals. Yeah. Transactional activities. Yeah. So maybe that's kind of the term, but like, hoe phone was like, dang, this guy really has a hoe phone. Look, Rob, like, what is this? Oh my gosh, like, it's so obvious at this point. Like, what are you doing? You know, you didn't even take it off the Bluetooth
Airplane.
Or whatever. Yeah, like, it's just a bad look. It's just so bad. I don't know how they're gonna explain this, or if this was a setup. Mm-hmm. And to make it worse, the nail in the coffin, because it could have been anyone's phone.
Yeah.
It literally could have been anyone's, until the voicemail comes on and it's him. It's his voice on the voicemail going, hey, this is my phone or whatever.
Yeah. Like, oh, explain yourself, Rob.
Explain yourself. He's like, he's just like, it wasn't me. You know, like, what are you talking about, dude? If your phone is on like airplane mode, then you got to have another phone, because that's the voicemail. That's your voice on
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
It's on your Bluetooth speaker. Like, who else's phone is it? It's not like a producer's or a cameraman's phone. Get out of here, dude. Like, you're...
Exactly, dude.
He's slipping.
Oh, Rob. But yeah, I see you, Doug, the life coach, selling crystals in flea markets. And by the way, I don't know what's up with Sophie when she said, oh, we don't have flea markets in London. It's just outdoor malls. That is a flea market, my dear.
It's a flea market.
I mean, I'm not from London, and yet I know that you guys have the Portobello Antique Market, which is essentially a flea market. So I don't know what she's on. Maybe
she's too bougie.
Yeah, true.
Too bougie for it. She's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe she's only doing Harrods and indoor malls.
It's out of her tax bracket to know what that is, right? Like, what? Peasant stuff? Like, what did she call it? Hand-me-downs or used stuff? She said it's like a market with a bunch of secondhand used things. I was like, well, no, there's vendors, you know, that sell their own crafts and,
trinkets,
you know, and handmade goods. And yeah.
Yeah. She needs to wake up and smell the cookie cake.
The cookie cake.
But I have to say, though, Sophie's mom, Claire, I find her to be a bad influence. And I think we've established that because she had it for Rob for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's constantly planting all these ideas into Sophie, you know, like ideas like a hoe phone.
It's a hoe phone.
It's a hoe phone. I mean, I hope it's all acting, obviously, but like the mom really doesn't bless this marriage, man. She's just hoping it will fail. Like, well, what a supportive mom right there.
Yeah. When she's like, I moved back in with Rob. Like, what? You? And Sophie's like, well,
he's
we aren't married.
Yeah.
He's my husband.
The mom felt like almost surprised that Sophie had to move back with her husband. Where else would she supposed to be?
It was almost like she felt like she was winning Sophie back.
Right.
And then she felt as if Sophie was like, she was losing Sophie again to Rob, you know, in this little tug of war. Yeah.
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 Yep. Yikes. All right. So shall we move on to Ashley and Manuel?
What a mess that is.
Right?
Yeah, I don't.
It kind of escalated massively. I don't know what happened, but it just went south.
Yeah. To me, this is like the battle between like courtesy and control, right? Like, where do we draw the line to where you're kind of giving your partner like the courtesy of saying, hey, you know, I'm going to be here, or I'm going to do this, and them being controlling and them saying, you need to tell me where you're at. You know what I mean? And I kind of see both perspectives.
Right.
But then later on, we find out that it wasn't even about that. It's just that he wanted his space and he just wanted to be alone. And it finally came out. He's like, well, I didn't want to tell you because I need my space. Like, he said that. And there we go. And that's what this is like about. Like, it wasn't even so much that like, oh, you know, I didn't know whether to give you the courtesy of letting you know where I was going to be at or whatever. It was just like, I just didn't want you to fucking know because you were going to come with me,
right?
Basically. Yeah. And I don't want you to come.
I think Ashley needs to stop babying him too. Like, stop. I don't know if that's the right word, like nannying him as well, because like, let the men have a breather.
Mm-hmm.
I also felt for Ashley when she said when she was growing up, she wasn't hurt as a child. And so she feels that Manuel is just being dismissive of her and all she wants is to be heard. And then Manuel is like, all I want is for you to leave me the fuck alone. So it's definitely a misalignment there and a miscommunication, in my point of view.
Yeah. What I was going to say, and it relates to what you were saying, is she does have these issues and he believes that because of these issues that she's dealing with, perhaps insecurity, perhaps feeling some type of way because of her past, that she's taking it out on him.
Yes.
And to him, he's just doing the best he can.
Right.
And she keeps doing all these things because the issue is on hers to like fix. Like, she needs to do some inner work.
Yep.
You know, and he's like, I can't be a certain way just because your past or something, right?
Yeah.
That's not like my thing to like fix your issues or whatever.
Right.
So it's a mess that they're in right now. And him just leaving like that, but also her not wanting to talk to him. Now they're at a place where neither of them are communicating.
So. Yeah. It's sad to see that this whole thing is going downhill. Like, it's exploding in front of our very eyes. And yeah, it's really sad.
What did you think about the whole gaslighting? Because I know it's kind of a, not just a buzzword, but a hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some people feel that it's overused and that there are instances where it's not, but people are just, gaslight, gaslight. And now whenever maybe perhaps someone has a reasonable reason or what a reasonable reason, I don't know what I'm saying. Like a reasonable, you know, I don't know, just whatever, typical kind of argument bullshit, right? People are quick to throw out, oh, you're gaslighting me.
Yeah.
No, you really got some stuff you need to fix about yourself. How did you feel about like her perhaps saying he's gaslighting her?
I mean, I agree with you that the term gaslighting has been misused, I would say, right? Because it's a therapy word, you know, that and triggered. A lot of people misuse triggered as well, just like how people misuse OCD. But anyway, yeah. I digress. Yeah, I don't know if what they're going through fits in the narrative of gaslighting, being gaslighted.
Kind of felt that way.
I think it's just that they're not understanding each other. And so maybe Ashley felt like he's being dismissive. That I definitely can see. I don't think he was gaslighting her. I think he did address her concerns in the beginning. And then now it's starting to get to him. And he's like, okay, now it's a you problem. It's not a me problem anymore. You gotta fill in the gap that you need to, you know, fill in. And I don't want to be stifled. That's the message I get from him. Whereas Ashley wants him to open up and trust her and be more forthcoming. And I think he's doing his best, but I think we covered this last week too. Like, it's becoming a her thing, you know? I mean, I'm no therapist or psychologist or whatever, but I don't think this is gaslighting.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Also, did you catch that dude in the bar or the restaurant that they were in? Was he trying to flirt with Ashley? He was saying something like, hey, lie down on the couch and we can talk about it. And then he said something else. And Ashley was like, I don't want to deal with any men right now because I'm in a man-hating mode. You know, you're in the epitome of like my, I don't know what she was saying. I forgot exactly what she was saying, but I'm paraphrasing here. But just felt like the guy was trying to flirt with her. She was like, just pushing back.
I didn't think he was flirting. I think he was trying to be funny. His tone was a bit off in his delivery.
Okay.
But, and this is going to sound kind of bad, but I think he was joking and it was well-intentioned. I don't think this has anything to do with race, but the way there is a stigma that Black women face, you know, the loud Black crazy woman in public is just a terrible, like, kind of trope, you know what I mean?
And yeah.
I think in his way, I don't think he was being racist. I just think he was trying to be funny. And that was his way of like, I can be your therapist, right? Because, you know, when you go to show up to therapy, they have a chase and you're supposed to lay down and tell them your problems.
Yeah.
So she was saying something like she has problems and things like this. You know, like you said, she said, well, the reason I'm like this is because of my past and I have these things. And he's like, oh, well, did you want to lay down and I can like sit next to you and talk to you about it? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I thought it was like his way to passive aggressively tell her to shut the fuck up or to calm down. So maybe I needed to get the full context. But yeah, by the time the camera captured that moment, I was like, why is he interfering in all this? Like, he was trying to be funny, I guess. Like you said, it just came off as, all right, well, mind your own
business.
It could
be that too, though. There's like language is weird like that, right? It could also be subtly. He can't just come out and say STFU. He can't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what you do is you disguise that language with something like
passive aggressive.
Something perhaps passive aggressive or might have a tone of humor.
Yeah.
But in essence, you're just saying, yo, you need
to. Yeah. You need to calm the fuck down. This is a public area or whatever, right? But that plays into that whole Black women trope, which is, you know, at the end of the day, that seems offensive. All right, you know what else is offensive though, Lon?
Are we getting into the couple I'm thinking about?
Jasmine pronunciation of crocodile.
No. I was going to say additional shots of Gino's feet.
Oh yeah,
because I didn't need to see that.
I didn't need to see that either. And Gino's weak attempt at trying to seduce Jasmine with his pale ass, smelly ass feet.
I don't know if he was giving his best effort. He's like, yeah. And he's like, does that,
how about
does
this?
That do it for you? Does that, yeah. I'm just like, what is this?
Ew.
She was not impressed.
But she was not turned on.
Yeah, I did think it was hilarious on Gino's expense, though, when she's like, look, we're going to have a quickie and I'll pee on you and all that good stuff like that you like, but not right now. I'm just like,
casual?
Yeah.
That's a pedestrian. Okay. Like, what? That's all y'all to be doing? Okay. Mm-hmm. At someone else's house? Ew.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm starting to side-eye Jasmine because I think she's just trying too hard, right? And then in this episode, she's like, ooh, I love crocodile. Oh, I don't know how she pronounced it. Chocodile or something. Chocodrile. I forgot how she pronounced or mispronounced it. But I was like, really, Jasmine? Really? Is this what you're selling to the viewers? That you love crocodile? I bet she can't even distinguish between an alligator and a crocodile because I thought Florida is known for alligators, but you know, I'm not a Floridian, so but yeah, I'm just not impressed with Jasmine lately. I don't know why. She's trying hard.
Yeah. And it might be because she has other things on her mind, more like her kids. Mm. And now she's just on camera to be on camera at this point, but like she's dealing with other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which we also are seeing that it's her kids and the fact that she kind of told Gino that she was like interested in the baby and she's actually not interested in the baby or in having a baby. So that scene, the bubble bath scene, was not even that she didn't want to get intimate. It was that she didn't want him to have an opportunity to procreate, right?
So
she's dealing with all these other things right now, like
avoiding the inevitable, I guess.
Disguised as depression,
right? Crafty. Oh, crafty. Okay, before we cover Thais and Patrick, is there anything you want to say about Lauren and Alexi or Mahmoud and Nicole?
No. Lauren and Alexi, I mean, aside from what we talked about last week, I'm just not really interested in this story.
I know, like, me too.
If I wanted to watch somebody's surgery, there's other programs for that.
Yeah.
I don't see what this has to do with the franchise. I just was not interested. Like, yeah. I was like, is this it?
Quick plug, I was watching this TLC show called Remove My Tumor. Very interesting. It's like Pimple
Popper.
Exactly,
right? There's better shows.
Yeah, there's specialized show if you want to watch like Botched, for example, on E! Channel, right? Botched, yeah.
I've seen some of those.
Yeah. Not that I want Lauren's surgery to be botched, but like, you know, if you're really interested to know about this journey, there are more interesting shows about those type of things. I do want to say quickly that Nicole was gaslighting Mahmoud.
Mm.
Right? Because Nicole was like, why did you leave? Bloody hell, you told him to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think that qualifies. Again,
it was all kinds of toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't got to talk. We don't got
to
go into
I know, we don't have to. But I just want to end with saying that I bet the producers was like pressuring her to chase after him. It's like, we gotta have content. Aren't you gonna get in your car and try to find this guy? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, anyway. All right. So, last couple, Thais and Patrick. Thoughts?
I mean, I'm glad. At first, I was getting frustrated because it didn't seem like Thais was gonna speak up about why Patrick had gone the route he went. And the dad did have a point. The dad was like, you were here on three other occasions. You can't bullshit me and tell me, no, you were here.
Yeah.
You could have given me your intentions that you wanted to marry my daughter. Right. But, you know, again, he was following Thais's lead. And she's like, do not say anything. Right. I know my dad.
Yeah.
And she was putting fear, you know, of God into him. So I'm like, is she going to speak up? And then she did.
She finally did. Yeah. It was a sheepish apology, though. The way she said, I mean, if we were to trust the translation, because I always find the subtitles like sus as well. Like it's not always accurate. And my husband happened to be a Portuguese speaking person. So like, there's some translation that's not quite accurate. But I would say like Thais's apology was kind of weak. Like she was trying to
sweep it under the rug kind of really quick. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad that Carlos was being very impartial and he was like not exactly blaming Patrick. Giving Patrick the chance to explain himself obviously was a classy move. Not that he shouldn't, but, you know, it didn't explode into some sort of drama. I think the only drama, if you can call it that, is I think it was really heartwarming to see Carlos cry when he first saw Thais and Elise. And it was a really nice reunion to see all of them together. But yeah, I also want to commend Patrick for trying to be authentic, right? He didn't want to immediately ask for his blessing, because then that would be like, okay, now you're just being insincere.
Like an obligatory.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, let's do it right now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I was on the fence, because I understood what he was doing. But to me, it seemed like Thais was concerned because this was a different cultural norm. Mm. Like she expressed, I don't understand what he's talking about. Mm. And then it hit me like, oh, is this an American thing perhaps? Because then maybe she's like, you need to do it now. Like, yeah, yeah. What do you mean you're not gonna? So then it made me go reevaluate. You know what I mean? I understood what Patrick was saying. And then I was like, oh, wait, like maybe this could be seen as disrespectful. Like,
yeah.
We're here right now. I'm literally at this table asking you for it. And you're going to say, I want you to to respect me first.
Yeah.
So it made me kind of step back and go like, oh, okay. Yeah. Because Thais was like, I have no idea what he's talking about. Like,
And, oh, I was going to ask you, Lon, does your dad remember your birthday? I bet he does, right?
I assume that he does.
But it's actually your mom telling him that. Hey,
that's what I'm wondering. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm wondering if it's my mom. And then she's like, it's their birthday.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I have no visibility into who reminds who about that.
Because I was going to say, you know, I noticed Carlos, I guess he was caught forgetting Thais's birthday. And I was thinking like, damn, my dad forgets my birthday, man. Like, but I also attribute that to the fact that, you know, my mom had passed. And I think it was my mom that... my mom was great at remembering people's birthday. You know, that's one of her superpowers, remembering people's birthday. And yeah, I think the only reason my dad would wish me is probably because my mom, when she was still alive, like would probably nudge him about it, right? And so like, that's how it got me thinking like, well, is this a dad thing? Like forgetting, you know, birthdays. Because Carlos looked like he's very young.
I'm bad at remembering dates. Yeah, I'm bad at remembering dates. I'm pretty... upfront about that. So yeah,
all right, well, we are all humans, and speaking of which, we've reached the end not speaking of which but we've reached the end of our coverage of episode 8. Lon, what is your WTF moment?
It's the whole phone for me.
Yeah.
It's the whole phone for me.
It's the airplay for me.
The airplane.
Voicemail. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, look, I get Rob. Rob the Knob is not perfect. I get it. Mm-hmm. But I'm still rooting for the guy. Mm. I'm still rooting for him and Soph, even though we know what we allegedly know about the relationship. But I want to root for this guy. And he's not making it any easier. Like, this is crazy. This is so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you have... like a hoe phone lying around somewhere and everybody heard it and it was on camera and your voicemail popped up and it's you. Like, this is such a bad look.
Gosh.
Yeah. It's hard for me to root for you, bro.
How is he a broke ass and has a hoe phone? Come on. The math ain't mathing there. Like, make it make sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my WTF too. How dare him. That, and I didn't know amethyst is for clairvoyant people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my birthstone. I could be wrong. That might be my birthstone. All right, Lon. So anything else you'd like to cover? And by that, I mean, can you explain to us, you know, layman folks about this rap beef that's been happening lately? Because... you know, some of us, like me, we're not in the hip crowd anymore. And yeah, we're all trying to understand what's going on. But if you could summarize it for us. And yes,
sure,
listeners, we are.
I would.
Yeah, we are jumping into the bandwagon since everyone is doing it anyway. So, and Lon is a huge hip hop connoisseur, as I, you know, would identify him to be. So take it away, Lon.
All right. They're calling this one the Great Hip Hop War. Hip hop battling is just part of the culture of hip hop when it comes down to lyricists, rappers, MCs, however you go about it. It's just always been part of the competitive spirit of hip hop. You know, when hip hop was first born, MCs would get on the mic and try to rock the crowd. MC actually means master of ceremonies. And then it became about who could do it better. And when it became about who could do it better, it became about boasting, perhaps attacking the other MC and saying, I'm actually better than you because of X, Y, Z.
And that's why it's called battle rap.
Right. That's how we came and evolved into battle rap, which was just almost at first, like just friendly kind of stuff. And then it became diss records. And diss records, as everyone knows, diss means to disrespect, which kind of elevated just the simple kind of jabs into more personal attacks on person.
Right.
For people who really are into the lyrics, there's still the lyricism, the kind of usage of literary devices and who can employ better wordplay and punchlines. But now this element of like, I'm going to attack your integrity and I'm going to attack your character. It took it to another level. And some people are kind of disagree about whether or not that should be included. Anyways, so the big three, right? Whenever people get in discussions about the GOATs, greatest of all times, there's always, all right, who are in your top five? Who are your top three of all time? And obviously the common names, Nas, Biggie, Tupac, Jay-Z. This generation is J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar and Certified Lover Boy, Drake.
Drizzy.
Right? Drizzy. Right. So...
So or Jimmy Brooks to some of you watching Degrassi, right? Is it Jimmy Brooks?
Jimmy Brooks. I forget his last name. I know some people refer to him as Wheelchair Jimmy because toward was, the later seasons, he was shot and ended up disabled. So anyways, throughout the career, obviously people are always going to compare the big three, like who's better, who has a better catalog, who has a better pen game, you know, who has better rhymes, delivery, content. It's not always about hits, but we'll just go ahead and say it, like Drizzy got the hits. But, you know, does he say anything substantial? Is his content really what core hip hop audiences want? And when you're asking that question, it's very different. What they play on the radio, for everyone that loves hip hop, everyone knows what's considered pop is what gets played on the radio. Real hip hop doesn't get much airplay, but real listeners know. That is why Kendrick Lamar has 17 Grammys. That is why his albums are considered to be masterpieces. That is why Damn earned him a Pulitzer Prize. Like, this guy's pen game is absurd. So now, well, let's just say this. For over a decade, Drake and Kendrick Lamar have been kind of subliminally throwing shots at each other over tracks. And it never escalated into like something that we have today. But it's been bubbling under the surface. And there have just been other bigger events that led up to this, you know. Part of it stems from Drake and Kendrick Lamar at first being friends. Drake saw Kendrick Lamar's talent, brought him on tour with him. And then once they started having disagreements, Drake kind of felt some type of way like, dude, I brought you under my wing. And Drake feels like Kendrick owes him for that. You know, like, I'm the reason you're successful, which is kind of a stretch. I get it. Yeah, I gave you some exposure. But I think Kendrick would have been successful regardless. His library of work is amazing.
And he's signed to Dre's record label.
Yes.
So
yes, exactly.
He's already riding that coattail. He doesn't need Drake, in my point of view. In my layman, non-hip-hop.
Exactly. But Drake likes to take these, credit. Like, credit.
Sure.
Right, for all that.
Just like him stealing Weeknd's work on Take Care, like what you scooped me on earlier. Okay.
Yeah. So throughout the years, the question's always, who's better? Drake, Kendrick Lamar, and J. Cole. Like I said, so throughout the years, there have been these jabs. One of the bigger jabs was on a record, Big Sean, featured Kendrick on a record called Control. And on this record, Kendrick was actually naming names and actually saying, I'm better than all y'all. He even said, I'm coming for your head. And he named all these people, including the guy whose record he was on. He mentioned Big Sean. Dang. And this is Big Sean's song.
Yeah.
He's featured on it. And he's like, yeah, Big Sean. Like,
Big Sean's like, song. Dude, by the way, I'm on
this is
song.
My record. You know, but again, it's in competitive spirit.
Sure.
But, you know, apparently Drake didn't see it that way. Or whenever Drake was interviewed about it, Drake would find ways to kind of take a jab at Kendrick. Like, you know, I think that's fake. Why are you cool with me if you're going to say these things? So we're just going to skip over. So fast forward, right? A new record comes out. Future and Metro Boomin. Ooh. They put out a record. It's basically all about Drake and disrespecting Drake. And they invite people on it who also don't like Drake. That includes The Weeknd and Kendrick Lamar. Great. And on the track with Kendrick Lamar, Kendrick Lamar takes shots. It started with a friendly verse from Drake and J. Cole mentioning the Big Three. And they were kind of saying, yeah, you know, it's us. And it was kind of a friendly thing, right? Like, we're the Big Three, you know? Kendrick on this record says, fuck the Big Three. It's just Big Me.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, I don't care about what y'all are doing. Like, it's just me. Like, what the hell is that? And then from there, J. Cole drops a record, which the next day, maybe it was a couple of days, he later backtracks, apologizes, and says, look, that's not the kind of music I want to make. Once I put that record out, I regretted it. It's not the energy I'm on. I don't want to be here bad mouthing people and whatever. It's just didn't feel right for me. So he bows out gracefully, which he caught a lot of flack for. And then it just left Drake and Kendrick. Mm. So obviously Drake drops a diss track. He drops, I want to say, two, which then Kendrick responds to and responds with like three, I want to say, records. I think two, and then Drake responds with another one.
Yeah.
There was so much. There was so much content. I think I want to say in the last 2 weeks, there have been like nine records between Kendrick, J. Cole, who contributed one, and Drake. They could have came out with a whole fucking album.
Right.
With how many records came out. And at the time you're listening to this, the battle might continue, but I think the consensus is that Kendrick has won the battle. There's a lot to unpack. I don't know how much more you want to get into it. There really is a lot to unpack. There's obviously, there's the conversation for me, which I like, which is this was actually a battle between two people, but they represented the soul of where hip hop was going to be. Is hip hop going to be for the casuals, for people who are into pop hits, or is it going to remain true to what the essence of it was like lyricism, content, and what diehard hip hoppers love? You know what I mean? And I think, you know, with Kendrick coming out on top, there was this big collective sigh of relief. Like, yes, like the culture is still here. Drake, you're great. You make great pop. And not to take anything away from Drake, but this was a battle between like the soul of hip hop, what many were seeing it as. Like, is it going to be radio, you know, or is it going to be, you know, people who put out these really well thought out, conscious, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning masters of work?
Yeah.
Or a guy who has number one hits for mass consumption that the casuals love to dance to.
Yeah.
I saw some very interesting conversation about women and women being used as tools in this war. Be it, you know, someone else slept with your wife and you beat your wife and, you know, oh, well, you're a pedophile and you have a daughter, and just whoever you side with, is this a problem we're going to address? Or are we just going to continue to let it slide? Like, oh, I don't give a fuck. Like, they can talk about women, whatever. Like, is this a conversation we're going to continue? Right. So there's that aspect.
Question for you, Lon. I don't really follow Kendrick Lamar, maybe it's a good thing because it seems like he's a private person. How true is that allegation about him beating his fiance or current wife or, you know, whatever that Drake is accusing him of? Because the thing is, as much as I agree that, you know, now you're taking pot shots, right? Like really below the belt stuff and using women as a tool here or the subject matter. I think we all know, and this is very public, that Drake did go after Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. And this was when she was, really young? I forgot how old she is. But yeah, that was a very weird correspondent. And at that time, maybe people didn't raise any red flag. But then there were obviously, you know, folks that are like, wait, the age gap is kind of weird. Like, why would someone who's like in his 30s message someone who's in their teens out of nowhere? You know, and that was suspect. And then now we started to learn that, you know, perhaps Drake is involved in trafficking, possibly, allegedly, right? Yeah, but then I wonder, like, is Kendrick a saint? Or is Kendrick also guilty of his own, you know, does he have, like, his own, like, you know, weaknesses, I guess? Like, how true are those?
I think we all have our skeletons.
Yeah.
At first, I thought it might have been rumored that he did, that these allegations are true. But I'm getting mixed reports. Some people are saying, oh, well, he doesn't have the receipts. Some people are saying they can't find it on the internet. Mm. And what other people are saying, too, is that perhaps he might have alluded to it in his music. And I'm not familiar with his entire library of work. Yeah, Good Kid, Mad City. I'm pretty familiar with Damn. I'm pretty familiar with, but, you know, Mr. Morale and To Pimp a Butterfly, which people really, really, really love. I enjoyed, but I didn't get into them as much. Right. So I might have missed some context there. So, you know, when it comes to those allegations, I can't say I 100% am confident saying that they're true.
Yeah.
But I will say we all have our skeletons. And for me, this is another conversation about the battle is that, you know, and it's why J. Cole bowed out was because, okay, is this going to be a battle about who's the more skilled lyricist and who has better album sales and who can boast? And is this going to be bar for bar like skills? Or is it going to turn into some like mudslinging, which it kind of, you know, turned into and it did.
Yeah.
And it was like, for some people, it was like this stopped being about who was better and it turned into who has the tea and who has the juicier dirt on the other person.
Right.
Yeah. And there's some people who argue, no, Kendrick didn't win because he's the better of the two. He won because he made these allegations of pedophilia and a hidden daughter that Drake, you know, apparently fed him information on that's false. It turned into who's more salacious. So that's another conversation. This battle sparked up a lot of very layered, nuanced conversations. And that's what I'm really, really interested in. Don't get me wrong. I'm born here in California from the Bay. So, you know, obviously they not like us. Like, that's a Bay Area banger. Pac was from Oakland. There's all kinds of things that I love about it. But there's definitely some things that I like to be kind of like a fly on the wall and just listen to what people are talking about and what people are saying.
And what else is your biggest takeaway from this rap battle? Because I have my biggest takeaway from this rap battle that I've kind of gathered from different people who've analyzed it. And it's something that I've always had.
Let's hear yours. Yeah, I want to hear.
So never thought that it would come down to this. But and I'm not an expert, by the way. I'm just like, you know, this is something that can be found on TikTok or the internet. So, you know, I'm trying to paraphrase this as much as best as I can. But so it turns out that a lot of people are seeing Drake for who he is, which is, you know, not a true lyricist because he does have ghostwriters, but also a cultural vulture, which to me as a non-African American, I was very surprised by, because to me as an outsider, I thought, okay, well, I know Drake is biracial, but like, why are y'all saying that he's a cultural vulture? He's not like a Justin Timberlake, right? I mean, I get it. Part of him is white, right? But like, he's also black. And then when it was explained to me by all this content creator, I kind of get it, because first of all, Drake is not American. At least he is North American, but he didn't grow up in the US. So he didn't have the US experience. He grew up in Canada. And I think it's no secret. I think he didn't grow up too badly. Like he had a really good childhood. I mean, the fact that he ended up in TV, I think he's kind of telling there, right? Like he didn't do so badly growing up. Mm-hmm. So it differs from like Kendrick, who grew up in Compton. I think folks who grew up in California know how rough Compton can be. And also how Drake appropriate African American culture. And I was like, what? Can you guys, like, I got confused there. And then like they go into like how Drake, you know, appropriated Afro beats, which I thought, like, is that really appropriation? Because I know he collaborated with, oh gosh, I'm so bad with names, but there's that one track that I like called One Dance, and it has the Afro beat. And I thought, okay, well, that's good. Like maybe because it was trendy at that time, and Drake likes to feature all these artists that are up and coming, right? Like The Weeknd, for example, even though that was a separate story of him, you know, doing him dirty or whatever. But I never thought it would come down to that. Like people here calling Drake a culture vulture. So that part really throws me off. And that was like, I guess my takeaway from this rap beef is that people are not only accusing Drake of like being a pedophile and maybe even involved in human trafficking, allegedly, but also like the culture vulture thing was like, what? That definitely, you know, shocked me.
Definitely. And that was a big part of Kendrick's argument, right? Mm. So when we look at hip hop was born, and this is a fact, in America, primarily, definitely like New York.
Yep.
Like it's rooted in Black American oppression. Mm. And this is a certain type of oppression that, I get it, biracial, Black, anywhere in the world, due to the nature of white supremacy, you're going to experience some certain oppression, obviously. But Black American oppression in the United States is different. Mm-hmm. Due to our history of slavery, right? And because hip hop was born out of that and the mm-hmm. the expression of that, the relationship to that may not come across to other people.
Mm.
Other, right?
Yeah. Outside other of people. US is what you're
right.
trying to
and
say.
For someone who's, you know,
grew up
mixed race in Canada, right? Yeah. Who grew up, you know, as a child actor, they're not going to relate genuinely mm-hmm. to keeping it real, right?
Yeah.
This is a slogan from like way back. And that's a big slogan in hip hop. Oh, is he keeping it real? You keeping it real?
Yeah.
Like, is it real? And to people who love the culture this way, who relate to the culture in this way, they see Drake as perhaps like cosplaying what he believes
an American rapper
hip hop is.
Yeah.
So then, okay. So he's taking identities from particular Black American cultures. Like, okay, he'll imitate the Bay Area, or he'll imitate, you know, Atlanta, which was a big thing for Kendrick to point out, or he'll imitate all these different sounds because he's cosplaying, you know, perhaps, or he'll try on these different looks,
right?
Because he's cosplaying, like appropriating. And I don't want to speak too much at length at it because I am not Black, and I want to be careful that I'm not speaking for Black people and Black culture, and that I'm only sharing what I know about hip hop culture and about, you know, oppression here in America as an American.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go into length about that. However, awesome, amazing Black creators on TikTok have already talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me name a couple of them. The Sasha Whitney and Twila Amor.
Mm.
Both have excellent, like, cultural TikToks about this, yeah, like about race and right, appropriation and the culturalness of it from a Black perspective. And if you want to go check out their TikToks, highly recommend. I don't know if they listen to the show, but they took the words right out of my mouth and even educated me more about it. So the Sasha Whitney and Twyla Amore.
I will link to that in our show notes. All right, Lon, anything else you want to say? I mean, maybe end this with which rap beef is your favorite?
Rap beef, that's my favorite. You know what? Actually, it's been this one. Is I was it more most involved. Entertaining? I don't know. So Eminem has been in some beefs, and I really loved those beefs.
Because he gets Big petty. Talk,
yeah, he gets petty. But I just love the lyricism. So for right, me, it was about lyricism and not so much about dirt,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the salaciousness of it and yeah, all this stuff. So for me, it was about lyricism. And I think technically, I get that people don't really jive with Eminem's content. I get that. But I think as a technician, and when it comes to his usage of the English language, I think he kills. Big N Pac was also cool, but it's tainted because of their deaths.
Yeah.
With this, it was cool to engage with it in a world of social media.
Yeah.
And to see people who are not generally into dissecting lyrics now dissecting lyrics and looking into this. It was fun to just kind of sit back and see people do that. So I rank this as really top notch.
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss hip hop beef.
I just want to call out some notable ones that I was aware of when I was growing up. And I think obviously if you grew up in the 90s, you know about Biggie and Tupac and, you know, rest in peace, Biggie and Tupac. But after that comes Nas and Jay-Z, and I thought that was very intense as well. And then I remember the beef about who gets the better album sales with 50 Cent, Kanye. Does anyone remember that?
Kanye.
Right?
I forget. Wasn't
there a beef between 50 Cent and Kanye? Like, you know, I think at that time someone was releasing an album and they were both releasing an album at the same time. Maybe I'll Google this. I don't want to like spew some bullshit here, but yeah. Oh, wait, Google said it. 2007.
Oh, damn. I might have missed out on that one.
People might know how old I am if I'm quoting a 2007. Yeah. So 50 was releasing Curtis and Kanye was releasing, I forgot what it was. But anyway, notable mention from me, because I realized that this is very male dominated. Nicki Minaj and Lil Kim had a Pink Friday beef thing. Yeah, I forgot.
There was that. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And I think Nicki Minaj and Remy Ma as well, but just, you nice, know, just putting in some sprinkles to that icing on the cake there.
Isn't Nicki like beefing with like Meg right now too?
Yeah. Yeah. I think she is. Yeah. She calls Meg, what was it? Bigfoot. Yeah. Oh, Nikki. All right. So that is all from us. Listeners, thank you for joining our episode here. And I just want to, by the way, Lon, let me end with this, right? I think the real winner here, and I'm pretty sure you're going to, you probably will say something. The real winner here is Macklemore. Macklemore just came in at the right time. Drop, was it Hines Hall or is it Hines Hall? You know, again, shout out to all the students doing encampment demanding divestment from you know who, peacefully protesting and yet being demonized in the media for being, you know, agitators or being infiltrated by terrorists. Like, that's bullshit. We all know that it's the call to action that they want, and they're just putting up tents and just, you know, staging their protests peacefully, exercising their rights as tuition-paying students.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to the students, man. I mean, you guys have heart. I really admire what those students are doing. I think there have been some successful stories from this university protest. And it all started, I believe, from the universities here in the U.S., I think, particularly in Colombia, which kind of got escalated a little bit. Well, not a little bit, but it really escalated. And then UCLA had their, I think it became ugly in UCLA. I think there was like some fireworks or whatever. There was like a lot of happenings, but just want to say, keep at it. Thank you for doing what you're doing with the protests. You know,
stay safe.
Yeah, stay safe. But don't look away, guys, because they didn't stop the invasion. They're doing a lot of G killing at Rafah right now. And coincidentally, you know, there's a lot of things to distract us. Unfortunately, the red beef is one of them. But also, as you guys know, Met Gala happened recently. And then I think right now, the Eurovision Song Contest is also happening. So a lot of distraction, but just keep up with the BDS movement. All right, y'all. Till next time.
Bye-bye. I am sad and so dark.